Welcome to Health Freedom Radio, live and local, from the center of New England, the center of the dial, and the center of information, Radio Central WCRN, 830 AM. Now, here are your hosts, Julie Boris and Lisa Mayer.
Good morning, I'm Julie Boris, and this is Health Freedom Radio. Health Freedom Radio is a new show airing weekly on Tuesdays from 9 to 10 a.m. on WCRN Radio Central, and we'll be talking about all things health freedom uncensored. I want to start today by thanking today's show sponsors, Health Rights Mass and My Salon Suites in Westboro and Leominster, just like my friends at Health Rights MA and My Salon Suites. We believe all people have the fundamental, inalienable right to make their own health decisions for themselves and their families, free from coercive tactics and bribery and mandates, and that no one should ever be forced into any medical procedure against their will before they can live, work, or go to school. So before we get underway, we are not representing any organization. The views expressed on the show today are our own, and the views of our guests are their own, and also we are not medical doctors or attorneys and are not offering any legal or medical advice, although I do have an attorney in the studio today. And my co-host, Lisa Mayer, is finally here today, and we're going to be talking to her in just a minute because Lisa has been absent from the show for the last 3 weeks. She literally just walked in the door, and she's putting on her headset. And so, Lisa, good morning.
Good morning. I'm so happy to be back. I really missed you guys, but I was listening to you, and you've had amazing episodes in my absence. You don't need me, but I'm happy that I'm around, that you keep me around.
Lisa, I had the whole first segment planned. I was here. Lisa, we're here with my co-host, Lisa Mayer, and, like, Lisa's not here. Lisa's not here. He's not here. But Lisa is here. Yay. So Lisa, tell us why you were kind of absent for the last 3 weeks. What happened?
Okay. Well, there were a few things. One was I was sick, really sick one day. And then I went to Florida. And also right before I went to Florida, we had an election and I was running for the Republican State Committee. So that was really busy. And then when I got down to Florida, we found out that the difference in the vote was less than 0.5%. So we decided to do a recount. So by the time I got back, it was all about the recounts. And there was a recount last Tuesday morning. So I was at that. Yes. And unfortunately, the recount did not change the outcome of the race. So I'm not in the Republican State Committee at this time.
Well, that just frees you up for many other things like Health Freedom Radio.
That's right.
So one of the things that I feel like is going on in the state, like if we're going to protect health freedom or really all freedom, people are really going to need to step up and get involved. And I think just for years, we the people, myself included, have lived really busy lives. We, you know, we went to school, work, sports, kids, travel, et cetera, all of those things. And we really left the business of politics to other people. And now we are in a really big mess.
Yep, that's exactly what I did. I didn't think we had to worry about that, but we really do.
Mm-hmm. We have to be part of the process. But I do think we're reaching a tipping point where that is happening. I think people are so disgusted by the current agenda, and I'm laughing even though it's not funny, but they are finally stepping up and getting involved in some way. It's kind of like that movie, The Network. Like, I've had enough and I can't take it anymore. Is that, am I getting that right? So to all the people out there that are pissed off, don't get mad, run. Mm-hmm. And if you lost your job because of the mandates, well, run. There mm-hmm. are 200 rep and Senate positions available every couple of years, and we the people are hiring. So, Lisa, I one thing I wanted to talk about real quick, we have a caller coming in soon, but I am very excited about this idea of the Freedom Slate in Massachusetts, which is a slate of candidates who still hold the United States Constitution. Again, it's not funny, but I'm laughing, and civil liberties in high regard. So I know that you're a little bit more involved in that. Can you tell us real quick what that's all about and kind of what's going on there?
Well, so the Freedom Slate listed all of the Republican candidates for state committee who really do care about freedom. I was honored to be on there. And I talked to the creator of the Freedom Slate last night, and he definitely wants to continue with the Freedom Slate for all upcoming elections, you know, no matter what side. But it's mostly the Republicans who are supporting freedom, so it'll probably be more focused on that side of the aisle.
So it's not too late for people to step up and run. Is that true?
That's right. Yeah, you can still step up and run for many different offices. So encourage you to do that. And if you decide that's not for you, then please support somebody maybe who's on the Freedom Slate.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think one thing to keep in mind is it's a marathon. It's not like, don't expect to run and win the first time. Like, expect to almost run and lose the first time,
right?
Because it takes a little while to get your name out there and get that recognition and knock on enough doors that people really, and, you know, enough people out there. But I do think we're reaching that point where people are getting involved. So please, to everybody listening, what is the one thing you can do today to step up and get involved? Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about stuff like that later. Mm-hmm. But right now we have Heather on the line, and she is today's health freedom loving business. And her business is Thyme Herbal Apothecary. It's at 277 Shrewsbury Street, Worcester. And we met Heather and Brittany, the owners of Thyme Herbal Apothecary, at a recent Make Americans Free Again meeting. Go to makeamericansfreeagain.com, where they shared their story of what inspired them to start Thyme Herbal Apothecary. Thanks for coming on today, Heather. I think you and Brittany were both nurses, right? Or you both worked in healthcare? Is that true?
Yeah, so both Brittany and I both worked at UMass for many years as bedside nurses and have since left. Health autonomy is something that's very important to us, so we really appreciate what you're doing with your radio show and with the MAPA group. So now we opened our own herbal apothecary on Shrewsbury Street, as you mentioned, with the goal of empowering our community to helping to connect them with the resources and education they need to just recognize that there's other options out there.
Right. And it was it the mandates that encouraged, that kind of forced you out of, you know, I think I remember you saying it was kind of like a push came to shove and you were just like, we're not doing this. Let's go do something else.
When the COVID mandates came around, both Brittany and I opted not to get the vaccine. And as such, we lost our jobs. But rather than lay down and die, we decided to pursue a path of wellness that we both were incorporating in our own lives, and we believe that herbalism is a fabulous route for preventative medicine and subacute medicine. So
God's medicine.
We're here to offer that, yeah.
I love this because it's such a great example of the silver lining of all of that tyranny, and so it's good to look for the silver linings.
It really is quite serendipitous.
Mm-hmm. I came in to visit the store on Saturday. It is beautiful. You walk in and the walls are lined with a jar of the most, like, everything you've ever seen.
We have over 200 bulk loose medicinal herbs, loose leaf teas, spices. We also carry tinctures, tonics, elixirs, and a wide variety of natural remedies.
So, and you also do like classes or I don't know, workshops?
Yeah, we offer classes throughout the year. We offer them seasonally to provide different education and some just for fun, just, you know, bringing forth different ideas to people.
Like, yeah, Lisa, you went to one, right?
Yeah, I went to one with Naomi, the other Freedom Sister, and we came for the Fire Cider workshop, and it was amazing. And I still have a tiny bit left, and I'm just savoring it and make it again.
So that's really fun. And these are like small little workshops, right? You can fit like 10 people.
Yeah, our space is pretty small, so we're limited to 10 participants. Mm-hmm. We just had a make your own sourdough workshop this weekend that went excellent.
It's
so
it.
Good for a natural probiotic. And we try to do things like that just to let people know that there's other ways you can support your body just through food and medicine. And you don't always have to jump to pharmaceuticals. And certainly there's a time and a place for that. But preventative medicine, like I said, is the best medicine. And herbalism is great for that.
So again, let's test. Your store is 277 Shrewsbury Street, right? In Worcester. I got parking really easily just out front on the street. It wasn't a big deal, even though Shrewsbury Street is pretty busy. Anything else you want to tell people before you go? I heard you had a mocktail workshop. Is
Ooh.
That true?
Yes. Yep. We also had a mocktail workshop recently where we infused different herbs, so you can still drink and have fun without the alcohol and actually be supporting your body during that time. So that was great. People really loved it, and we'll be continuing on with the events like that throughout the year.
And your website is?
It's www.timeherbalapothecary.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in, and I will be in to visit soon.
Me
thank
too.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. So when we come back after the break, we're going to be talking with attorney Peter Vickery, who is here in the studio with us today. We'll be talking about the First Amendment, the one that protects both our religious freedom and freedom of speech. Since 2021, he has been representing people who sought religious exemptions from the COVID-19 experimental liability-free injection mandate. But now we're going to hear some more great protest music of our current time. Five Times August has an amazing album called Silent War. The whole album is great, so it was really hard to choose a song for today, but we're going to go with I Will Not Be Leaving Quietly, since it's pretty spot on for our topic today. So Ted is going to play that right now.
Beauty or wellness professional looking to take your career to the next level? Has your career plateaued and you're looking to kickstart your ability to improve your professional and financial situation? Have your skills and clientele grown faster than your earnings? And would you love to work in a drama-free collaborative environment that impresses your clients and is uniquely you? Hi, my name's Ed, and my wife Amy and I own the My Salon Suite locations in Leominster and Westboro. If you're a beauty and wellness professional, or you know someone who has a passion for helping people look and feel their best, and you're looking to level up your career to achieve new heights of professionalism and profitability, we'd love to talk to you. We're building communities of thriving entrepreneurs who know the value of offering clients an amazing experience in an upscale, safe, state-of-the-art environment. Give us a call today at 508-500-9000 or visit mysalonsuite.com/Leominster or /Westboro to set up a confidential tour. Mention Health Freedom Radio and get your first rental week free.
Good morning. You're listening to Health Freedom Radio on WCRN Radio Central, 830 on the AM dial or at WCRNradio.com. I just want to start by thanking our show sponsor today, Health Rights MA. The mission of Health Rights MA is to ensure that the fundamental human right to bodily autonomy, including the right to exercise informed consent, and the right to privacy of personal medical information is legally protected in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts in regards to all medical and health care treatments and procedures. So if you're listening from Massachusetts and you have a story to share about injury or loss from the COVID-19 shot, or if you lost your job or access to an education because you chose not to get a liability-free experimental COVID-19 injection, please share your story at healthrightsma.org. Right in the top menu, you'll find a tab for sharing your story. If you want to keep us talking about Health Freedom Radio Uncensored on the airwaves, where we can reach outside the censorship bubble, we're going to need sponsors. And we have some great ways to get the word out about your business to the New England health freedom-loving community. Apparently, WCRN Radio reaches far beyond Massachusetts in its parts of every state in New England. And of course, you can listen from anywhere at WCRNradio.com. Just email hello@healthfreedomradio.org and ask about our sponsorship opportunities. Other ways to support the show, be a walking billboard, get and wear our merch on the website, healthfreedomradio.org. We have 100% cotton t-shirts and sweatshirts with the logo. And on the back, it says, join the health freedom conversation uncensored. And when you wear it out and about, it will not only help get the word out about the show, it will help you connect with like-minded people. So when someone in the grocery store says, hey, I like your sweatshirt, you know that person like you cares deeply about health freedom.
And if it's a really nice sweatshirt, too. I love the design. Love it.
Thank you. They're really soft, nice, thin cotton.
And the logo is great.
If you are not a business, just a regular person that wants to support the show and keep us on the air every single week, go to the show website, healthfreedomradio.org. Scroll down on the homepage and hit the Give button. You can make a one-time or recurring donation to the show. And another thing you will now find on the website is the show notes. So all of the shows we've already done, all the guests, the relevant links that you heard on the radio that you're like, oh, what was that? The music, one of the businesses or the sponsors, you can find them all in the show notes. So today we're going to be talking with Peter Vickery, and I'm going to introduce him in a minute. But before we do, we're going to be talking about the First Amendment. So I thought before we introduce him, we should read it. Lisa, would you like to do the honors?
Sure.
Amendment number one.
I would be happy to. Okay, so Amendment one. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people to peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I said redress right. Yes.
So here in the studio today is attorney Peter Vickery. Peter practices law in Amherst, Massachusetts. He's been focused on landlord-tenant disputes, but since 2021, he's been representing people who sought religious exemptions from what he calls the no-jab, no-job rule, the so-called COVID-19 vaccine mandate. So Peter is a graduate of Oxford University, the University of the West of England, Boston University School of Law, and the Center for Public Policy and Administration at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. He is a former member of the Governor's Council and of the State Ballot Law Commission. And in addition to practicing law, Peter has taught courses on public policy and legislative drafting. So I think it's an honor to have you in the studio today.
Completely.
And at the outset of the pandemic, most attorneys wouldn't touch these cases with a 10-foot pole. I actually remember calling around and being like, will you take a case like this? Nope. Will you take a case like this? Nope. But you did. So, Peter, what possessed you?
Great question to start with. Thank you, Julie. Thank you, Lisa, for having me on the show and for everything you do to speak and organize for liberty, including medical freedom. So what possessed me was my fundamental belief in that thing that Lisa just read, the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, which guarantees, it doesn't create, it guarantees a right we already have to the free exercise of religion. And exercise is an important verb. The right that it guarantees is the right not just to have a religion, the right not just to possess and think about religion, but to actually exercise it. And what was really animating me and exercising me just before the weirdness began, so back in December 2019, January 2020, the thing that was attracting my attention and my extracurricular time was this thing called civil asset forfeiture, which now seems a little less important, but at the time was front and center for me because it was when the government comes in and just steals your stuff. They don't have to prove a crime. There doesn't have to have been a crime. They just take your car, take your cash, take your house. And I thought this is a really, really awful thing for Massachusetts to be doing, and we're one of the worst offenders. So I was thinking about that, and the reason I was thinking about it was I represent a lot of landlords. Thought to myself, if we're not careful, pretty soon in Massachusetts, if we don't care about something as egregious as civil asset forfeiture, maybe state government's going to step in and stop landlords getting paid for renting their property. And, well, then a funny thing happened. Mm-hmm. Exactly that. So the partial eviction moratorium came to pass. But as for the more fundamental question of why I decided to represent people who, because of their religious beliefs and their right to exercise those religious beliefs, were not able to take the messenger ribonucleic acid platform products advertised as COVID-19 vaccines and lost their jobs as a result. It was because I thought to myself, if we don't stand up for these brave people, what do we as a profession, what do lawyers have in the form of dignity? And that was for me. I don't mean that all lawyers who decline to take these cases lack dignity, but for myself as an attorney who took an oath to protect and uphold the Constitution of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts and the United States, it occurred to me that somebody needs to stand up for the rights of the people who are standing up for the rights of the rest of us. So that's it in a nutshell. Does that answer the first question clearly?
It does. And thank you so much for doing it. I mean, I definitely think more and more we're hearing and learning of more and more attorneys and lawsuits and cases. How many cases do you have in the state of Massachusetts?
Well, I've got a couple of dozen, and some others are still at the MCAD stage. And perhaps we can talk about the MCAD. It's the Massachusetts Commission Against Discrimination. So as some listeners may know, if you have a claim of discrimination against your employer or anybody else, before you can sue in court, you have to start at the Mass Commission Against Discrimination. So that's where most of my clients started. There's a federal equivalent called the Equal Opportunity Employment Commission. I'm sorry, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, EEOC. But the MCAD is the state agency that adjudicates claims of discrimination. Or if it doesn't adjudicate them and you get tired of waiting, you can jump out and go to court. But you do have to start at the MCAD. And that's where many of my clients' cases still are. We're still waiting. I should let listeners know that the likelihood of success for any of these cases in the MCAD, their religious discrimination cases, is slim because the MCAD has not found probable cause in any religious discrimination case since 2020. I did a state equivalent of the Freedom of Information Act request.
And that's in Massachusetts, but other states are different?
Yes, I haven't looked at other states' agencies, equivalents of the MCAD, but in the MCAD, I've asked to see the public record showing how many religious discrimination cases have resulted in a finding of probable cause, meaning there's enough evidence for it to go forward to a public hearing, and that's zero so far. One thing I can tell you about the EEOC is that I got a call from an agent, that's the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. That's where federal claims of discrimination have to start. And the agent handling one of my cases, it got transferred to another jurisdiction in the U.S. I don't know why, but he called me and said quite candidly, look, we have a policy of denying all the vaccine mandate cases. So I've asked the MCAD whether they have such a policy, and they say they don't. They don't have any documents reflecting that policy. But it's important for people to know that,
So what kind of cases are you actually, like, who are you representing? What kinds of people lost their jobs?
So people who were social workers with the DCF, Department of Children and Families, some former corrections officer with Department of Corrections, and some from a variety of other agencies. So these were, the social workers were people who were working in a variety of environments, some frontline, others reviewing cases, but they were all people who decided that their religious beliefs stood in the way of them getting injected with these products.
And were they all subject to the governor's mandate? It was at 595 or 95?
Executive Order 595, that's right. So Governor Baker issued EO 595 requiring all executive branch employees to get injected, what I call the no jab, no job rule. If you don't get injected and you don't get an exemption on religious or medical grounds, you don't have a job. So no jab, no job. And the people I represent all applied for exemptions, and we can talk later about whether that's the right way to go about anything.
I have opinions on that. But, sorry, so we're up against a break, so stay tuned after the break for more Health Freedom Radio, and we'll be here with our guest, Attorney Peter Vickery, on WCRN Radio, 8:30 a.m. on your radio dial, or you can listen to it on WCRNradio.com. So before the break, we were talking with Peter Vickery. He's an attorney from Amherst, Massachusetts. And Lisa has a great question. So why don't you start off, Lisa?
Well, Peter, what I was wondering was, what justification did the Massachusetts Commission Against Discrimination give for denying all of these claims of religious discrimination?
Undue hardship. So those that it's denied, as opposed to just still waiting to adjudicate, it says undue hardship. So let me back up a little and explain what an employer has to show and what the employee has to show in these cases. So as listeners will recall, back in August 2021, then Governor Charlie Baker issued Executive Order 595, which required people in the executive branch to get injected or try to get an exemption or just not work anymore. No jab, no job. And in order to get an exemption, the employees had to complete a form that explained that they had a sincerely held religious belief that stood in the way of getting injected. And there's kind of a trap with that form. You can give too little information or you can give too much information. Either way, it can hurt you, which we can discuss in a moment if you like. But the job of the state then, as employer, was to read these forms and to determine whether the employee had expressed a sincerely held religious belief.
Because government bureaucrats know about your religious belief better than you do?
Apparently, yes. And there's a whole host of jurisprudence about why that's not the case, why judges shouldn't be in the business of deciding what's inside somebody's conscience, what's their relationship, what's the relationship between their soul and God. And still less should employers, still less should state government be involved in making those decisions. But that's the first, that's the threshold issue. Has the employee articulated a sincerely held religious belief? And if the employee has, then the legal duty on the government as employer is to determine whether the government can accommodate that belief and allow the person to not get injected. And the government said, in 99% of the cases, we can't allow you to not get injected because allowing you to go around and continue working uninjected would cause undue hardship. Now, undue hardship is supposed to mean something, not just any hardship, but some undue hardship. And what the MCAD and, unfortunately, some courts have been buying is this idea that letting people continue to work without having been injected with these products caused a risk to other people of catching and spreading COVID-19.
Which we know is false.
Right. That's right.
We've known that since early 2021.
And there is, in these complaints that I file on behalf of my clients, I quote people like Rochelle Walensky and Deborah Birx, who make very clear, and I quote lots of scholarly texts that make abundantly clear, that simply getting injected doesn't mean that you're not going to catch COVID-19, you're not going to spread it to others. And one of the things I do in these complaints is I list just a long, long list of prominent politicians, governors, senators, presidents, Canadian prime ministers, who've gotten jabbed, jabbed again, re-jabbed, and what do you know, caught COVID-19 mm-hmm. time and again. So we all know this. This is common knowledge, that mm-hmm. getting injected doesn't stop you catching and spreading COVID-19. Nevertheless, what these cases hinge on is this belief, this article of faith, that if you don't get injected, you pose a threat of some kind to your co-workers and the general public. So that's where we are right now. That's the hurdle we need to get over.
Which just, I got to bring up the common sense thing, is if the jab worked to protect you from COVID-19, then you shouldn't really have to fear COVID-19 from the wild or from a person or wherever, if they worked. So I don't know, just this like common sense thing to me that I don't understand how people aren't understanding that right. still want other people to get it for them.
Right, and if the first one worked, why do I need 9 more?
Yeah, that's where we're on 10.
I think it has a lot more to do with other things, not public safety, you know,
yes.
compliance and
I agree. And I think that's the underlying issue here is it's a way of finding out which public employees will do as they're told and which won't. Mm-hmm. All dissidents take one step forward. That was the real point of Executive Order 595. And unfortunately, that happened. And we all know that that's wrong. We all know that people shouldn't be forced to be injected with products against their will. And it's not just because it's common sense. We as a country signed up to a universal declaration on bioethics about free and informed consent. And I'm certainly not saying we should use that as law in the United States. I simply say it to point out that as a country, we have agreed in the past that this is a fundamental principle, that free and informed consent before getting experimented on, before being injected, before any kind of medical intervention, the person needs to be fully informed of what the intervention entails and should be free to withdraw their consent at any time without negative repercussions.
And do you think that anybody who took the jab was fully informed?
Well, they can't possibly have been. They can't possibly have been. And I think it's clear that this is a moving target, mm-hmm. what the jabs really contain. It was moving at the speed of science, as that lady from Pfizer famously said. So what the effects of the jab were is still, to be generous, somewhat unclear.
Mm-hmm. Counselor, can I ask you a question?
I think you're allowed to do that. Yes.
Very good, then. What impact on the HIPAA regulations has this experience provided us?
I don't know. Outside my wheelhouse, I know that I think of it in terms of genetic information we have, so I don't know much about HIPAA. But I do know that we have a Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act federally and at the state level. And I think that this requirement that you get injected and tell everybody, tell your employer whether you've been injected, is a way of letting your employer know what your DNA status is. So we have a statute that prohibits employers imposing some sort of DNA test. Now, one might say these products don't interfere with your DNA. But is that true? Of course they do.
Yeah, they do. There's a lot of science showing that they do.
Yes. So I can't answer your question on HIPAA, unfortunately. Not my area of focus, but...
Well, my interpretation is that the HIPAA regulations was an opportunity to codify what you're describing. And I'm just curious why nobody has taken that
because it's
to the
actually
mat.
It's they keep I can just speak to that. They keep changing them constantly. That's number one, and that is only between your doctor's office and whoever they're going to give it to. So I do have a question for you. What is it going to take for you to win these cases? Like, what's the end game here?
Juries, I think. I hope that we can get in front of juries who have a great deal of common sense. Juries are strange animals. I have some experience with jury trials that have come up with very surprising outcomes. Nevertheless, I hope that if we can get through what's called summary judgment, if we can get through the judge bringing down the guillotine and saying, no, this case cannot go to a jury, it has to be decided now, and the state wins. If we can get past that and get in front of a jury, I'm confident that juries exercising common sense will be able to determine that getting injected with these products does not prevent you catching and spreading COVID-19. Therefore, allowing people to work without getting injected with the products would not cause undue hardship. The people who were working before uninjected were at no greater risk of catching and spreading COVID-19. And there's wonderful evidence of this, thanks to public records requests. For example, Department of Children and Families, after they had discharged all their employees who were not able to take the products because of their religious beliefs. After that, they had a lot of people calling out sick because of COVID-19. So these were all people who'd been injected with the so-called COVID-19 vaccines. But after they'd gotten rid of the people who had not been injected, a vast number of employees who had been injected were out sick with COVID-19. That's pretty compelling evidence that you can get injected and still catch the disease.
Or they were out with something else as a result of the COVID-19 vaccine, but that's another story.
Mm-hmm.
A story for another day. You said undue hardship?
Yes.
I have a question about that. Don't you think that firing somebody from their job and removing their income and they have a family to support would be undue hardship?
Well, it's certainly undue hardship on the individuals and their families, yes.
Yeah.
These people have had to endure a great deal of hardship and sacrifice. And then when they applied for unemployment benefit, I think nearly all were denied first time around. I've handled a number of appeals, and on appeal, people were able to obtain unemployment benefit. But what the agencies were telling their employees was, if you resign, if you go quietly, you might be eligible for recall at some point. But bear in mind, if you get fired, you won't be eligible for unemployment benefit. And so when people were fired, they applied for unemployment benefit and were denied. As I said, a lot of appeals one. But I think that most people who had their unemployment benefit denied did not appeal, and therefore they endured even greater hardship. But it is an unfortunate aspect, to say the least, of anti-discrimination law in the United States, and including Massachusetts, that the undue hardship is what's supposed to accrue to the employer. Mm-hmm. We have things upside down. It really should be, the burden should be on the employer, on the state, to demonstrate a very compelling reason for subjecting you to some medical procedure or medical intervention that you neither want nor need. And it should be the government having to prove its case. Whereas now it's the government saying, we as a default setting can require you to be injected unless you can demonstrate that there is some sincerely held religious belief, not just a conscientious belief. We used to protect conscientious objectors from these injections years ago. And the story about how that ended is worth its own show, I'm sure. But you have to prove a religious belief that it is sincerely held, and that allowing you to continue working would not cause undue hardship to the employer. So the law has gotten a little better since the Groff decision of the Supreme Court of the United States, but not a lot. It hasn't changed that basic problem of the allocation of burden.
And actually having to ask for an exemption to a liability-free product in the first place, religious, personal, medical, or otherwise, is just kind of insanity to start. So that's a whole other topic. But we're coming up on a break. And so if you want to stay tuned after the break for more Health Freedom Radio with guest attorney Peter Vickery on WCRN Radio, 8:30 a.m. on your radio dial. You can listen at WCRNradio.com. You can go to the website, healthfreedomradio.org, and you can listen there. And we'll be back after the break. You're listening to Health Freedom Radio on WCRN Radio Central, 8:30 on the AM dial or at WCRNradio.com. We're back with attorney Peter Vickery talking about the First Amendment. If you have any burning questions for Peter, you can call in now at 508-871-7000. That's 508-871-7000. I heard a great clip yesterday, very short, of Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who is, by the way, running for the President of the United States as an independent, which you wouldn't know if you were watching the mainstream media, so I just want to get that out there. And he's talking about free speech, and he sums it up quite nicely. So, Ted, can you play that?
Hamilton, Madison, Adams said that they put freedom of speech in the First Amendment of the Constitution because all of the other rights depended on it. A government that has the capacity to silence its opponents has the power to commit any kind of atrocity. The free speech aspects of the Constitution, they should be impervious to any kind of tampering. There has never been a time in human history that we look back and say that the people who were censoring speech were the good guys. They're always the bad guys. It's always because it's the beginning of a slippery slope toward totalitarianism.
Okay, so Peter, there is a really important case, currently at the Supreme Court related to free speech. It is called Murthy v. Missouri, I believe, and I would love to get your take on that. I'm sure some of our listeners know all about this case, but I'm sure many do not know anything. So if you could just give us a brief overview and let us know why it's so important, and then get into the details.
I would love to. First, I think I'd like to express my agreement with what Robert F. Kennedy Jr. just said. I happen to think that what precedes the freedom of speech is freedom of religion. It's sequentially in front of freedom of speech in the First Amendment of the United States, and I think that there's a reason for that. We have freedom of speech because we have freedom of exercise of religion. And one of the ways that freedom of speech is under attack still, even since the decline of the worst of the weirdness over the last year or so, is by way of censorship. And some listeners may say, only government censors, private entities, companies can't censor. Well, that's never really been true. It's certainly not been true since the 1940s, when the Supreme Court decided Marsh v. Alabama, which said when private entities, companies, are exercising powers that are traditionally exclusively exercised by government, they have to respect people's First Amendment rights as well. That was the case about the woman who was distributing religious literature on the sidewalk outside a public building in what turned out to be a company town. And the government, who tried to stop her speaking, said, well, this is a company town. This is private property. The sidewalk in any other town, the town just over the border, that would be public property. But right here in this town, it's private property. So the First Amendment doesn't apply. And the Supreme Court said, oh, yes, it does, because you're acting like government. And the jurisprudence has come a long way since then, to the extent that if government is using private sector actors as a proxy, or if it's colluding with them, it's using them as a cat's paw, working hand in glove with them, then they have to respect people's First Amendment rights as well. And to the case you mentioned just now, what's now called Murthy v. Missouri, because Murthy is the Surgeon General, and he's on the left side of the V. He's the one asking the Supreme Court of the United States to basically overturn an injunction that was issued in the Fifth Circuit restraining the government from censoring people's speech, from engaging in the shut up, he explained, manner of public discourse, of closing down debate, taking videos off YouTube, removing and suppressing tweets from people like Dr. Jay Bhattacharya and other authors of the Great Barrington Declaration, people like Dr. Aaron Cariati, who spoke out very forcibly in favor of bioethics, ethical standards, and against lockdowns, against the masking of children. Their speech online was removed, and it was suppressed by Facebook, ostensibly as Facebook, but really Facebook as government, at the behest of government, YouTube acting at the behest of government. I realize there is a mistake we can all make of thinking that these really are private entities as opposed to governmental entities. But of course, there is no constitutional wall of separation between Google and state. I think it's wrong to think of Google as some sort of neutral search engine. Functionally, it's an arm of the government. And when Google and YouTube and Facebook suppress speech, they're doing it as government. And that's what the case is about. And one of the instances I mentioned just now is the Great Barrington Declaration that was suppressed. Videos about it were taken down. Roundtable discussions on the perfidious effects of masking small children, the absolute folly of closing schools. These things got taken down. So did stories about Hunter Biden's laptop. And that's one of the points that the judge made in the Fifth Circuit in Louisiana. Actually, the district court judge, when he issued his opinion on July 4th of last year, he focused on the fact, and it is a fact, that the Hunter Biden laptop is real. It was in the possession of the FBI. Nevertheless, when some people tried to reveal this fact online, their speech was closed down, not by other individuals, but by government. Government, to be most generous, leaned on and encouraged Facebook, Twitter, and the others to suppress stories about a true story.
And television and newspaper.
Yes, this was a concerted effort to suppress a true story about Hunter Biden's laptop, not because of the salacious content of it, but because it disclosed the extent of the corruption of his family.
And that is election tampering.
Yes, it's election interference. Mm-hmm. And on an extraordinary scale, especially when you combine it with the statement from those so-called professionals from the so-called intelligence community saying that this had all the hallmarks of Russian disinformation. It was not Russian disinformation. It was truthful information that the government, in collusion with its allies in the media, suppressed. Then that's what the case is about. And I know that some people have been perturbed by the comments of one Supreme Court justice in how she interprets the First Amendment as possibly being something that might hamstring government. That's the point. That's what
exactly.
It's for.
Right. We need our Constitution to protect us from government overreach. That's why it's there.
Can I just say that part of the reason I woke up to what was going on is because I got censored on Facebook many times, kicked off for a month, for sharing published medical research that's on the National Institute of Health website regarding the incredible effectiveness of chloroquine for SARS-CoV. So that was the precursor to hydroxychloroquine working extremely well for the precursor to COVID. And so I shared that and they took it off immediately and kicked me off for a month. I found that pretty shocking.
I too have had a video removed from YouTube. It was an hour-long conversation with another attorney. We were discussing the Groff case about undue hardship. And we certainly discussed the products advertised as COVID-19 vaccines. And I think we were both quite careful not to be too pejorative in our comments about the efficacy, in quotation marks, of these products. We were somewhat careful. Nevertheless, the fact that we discussed it and the fact that we discussed censorship was in and of itself enough to get the video removed from YouTube. So with YouTube,
boggles my mind. Like, we're living in this time. I've been censored for probably 5 years, all of my social media. I have 2,500 friends on Facebook and like two of them see my posts. So I kind of gave up a little bit of that. But there's so much evidence, Peter. What's going to happen? Are they going to be able to, in the next phase of this trial, present this evidence, the Twitter files, you know, the writings of, you know, there's so many journalists that are speaking out. Matt Taibbi's one of them, and saying, you know, they came in and they came and they censored. It's very obvious. There's a trail of evidence a mile long.
Well, I fear that what the court is going to do is say that the plaintiffs don't have standing, which would be an unfortunate end of the case. But it's not the only game in town. There are other cases about censorship. There's Alex Berenson's case, and there are other cases. So the court may not decide this one on the merits. I think it would be unfortunate if they declined to rule in favor of the people who are fighting against censorship. But if the Supreme Court decision goes the way that we don't want it to go, people shouldn't be devastated, shouldn't lose hope. It won't be a good thing by any stretch of the imagination, but it's not the end.
It's not the end because there's more cases, or because that decision won't hold, or?
It depends on how narrowly they decide the case. Is it just going to be about standing? Can these individual plaintiffs show, or can the state show? Can Missouri and Louisiana show that their citizens were negatively affected by federal government and its private sector allies colluding to suppress speech? So standing is this narrow issue that might be what the court bases its decision on. But yes, there are other cases about censorship, and I think it is already well established that censorship is illegal and unconstitutional. This is not a case of first impression. What's really unfortunate is government flouted the law.
Okay, so that's it for our show today. And of course, thanks to Health Rights Mass and My Salon Suites.
You've been listening to Health Freedom Radio on the center of New England, the center of the dial, and the center of information. Radio Central WCRN, 8:30 a.m. Stay with us for more live and local radio right here on Radio Central WCRN, AM 8:30.